CBS Monday.
NCIS! Here's where we can see them.
NCIS and NCIS Hawaii return with all new cases.
Double tap to the chest, one to the head.
These guys are professionals.
All new criminals.
Violent island you got here.
Welcome to paradise.
And all new crimes to be solved.
If you're watching this, I've been arrested.
What are the charges?
Just one. Murder.
New NCIS and NCIS Hawaii, Monday, starting at 9, 8 central on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss, 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
I'm Kim Reynolds of Dogman.com with Chris Vetter, Scott Eklund, Colorado. 6 o'clock kickoff at Husky Stadium. And that game is on what channel, Chris Vetters?
Pac-12 Networks.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because my mom always used to call me and ask me what time and what channel. And now my sister does it. Now that my mom is gone, she does it just to aggravate me. But anyways, 6 o'clock on the – is that Pac-12 Network or Pac-12 Network Washington?
Pac-12 Network.
It's the main one.
It's the big Pac-12 is what you're saying.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Sure.
But still a little bit hard to put the Oregon win in the rear view mirror. Is it Chris Houston, the wide receiver at Oregon?
Hudson
came out and actually, you know, admitted that faking an injury was part of the game plan, which is pretty interesting because, you know, there seems to be a common thread when Tosh Lupoi was at Washington against Oregon. There were some accusations that Washington was faking injuries. Tosh Lupoi was suspended at Cal for a game back in the day.
Yep.
For faking injuries. And then it sounds like Oregon also faked an injury against Cal near halftime when they were out of timeout. So it's going to be interesting to see if anything happens with that. So I know that film has been sent to the league from both schools, but what do they do on that, Scott?
They say, sorry, Washington. I mean, that's really it. I mean, they don't do much. I mean, what if that had cost? What if they had gone on and tied up the game and Washington had lost in overtime? What would they say?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. It doesn't matter. I mean, all that crap doesn't matter.
And I found it. Yeah, I found it funny when the trainer came out and she was like, "What do you want me to do?" So she starts bending his leg, starts shaking his leg. So yep. I thought that was pretty funny. You think they do anything about that, Chris? Or maybe a harsh reprimand or something?
No, because you know, as John Wilner's pointed out, many others have pointed out that at the end of the day, what are they going to do? They're going to have to err on the side of the person they think is injured, regardless of whether they're faking it or not. That said, if they did enforce a runoff or something like that, it would be pretty amazing to see them try to get up and see if they're legitimately hurt. And if they're legitimately hurt, I mean, I don't know. I mean, what do you do? But Scott,
well, they suspended Tosh for a game in 2010.
Well, then penalize the coaches. Yeah, penalize the coaches all you want. Fine them. Do whatever you want to do. I just think that, you know, it's interesting because what Scott says is 100% right. I mean, if it impacts the game to the point where the team that it's happening to ends up losing and that ended up giving them a competitive advantage, could you forfeit the game?
I'm guessing that there's going to be a strongly worded phone call. You pull this crap again, you're not going to like the consequences. I'm guessing at least a phone call.
I remember back during the initial Rose Bowl year in 77 with Don James, where Washington ended up, and I don't remember if it was Mississippi State or another team, one of their non-conference teams that they lost to, ended up forfeiting a number of their games because they used an ineligible player. And that ended up helping Washington down the road, not to necessarily get in the Rose Bowl, but it actually counted as a win in their record down the road. I don't know if that took a year or whatever, but that's something that can happen, and there has been a history of it. Now with Washington, I don't know if there's another game since then where literally a result has been vacated or changed, but like I said, there's a history of it. It has happened. So
the USC, when USC had to forfeit all those games with Reggie.
Yeah.
Who was the
example too?
Yeah, who was the NFL team that originated it? Was it Cincinnati or New England? Do you remember back in the day?
Well, if I remember, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to come in hot there. If I remember correctly, it was Joe Nash versus Cincinnati. Because remember, there Cincinnati was running that super fast offense with Sam. I can't remember the head coach's name. Sam whatever.
Sam Weish
and Boomer Esiason and Eddie Brown and all those, again, Chris Collinsworth and all those guys. And so that's what really did it was Joe Nash was the one who went down five or six times. I think it was a playoff game. I'm pretty sure it was a playoff game.
Joe Nash. That's a ghost from the past, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah.
I got some stories because I've had drinks and dinner with him before. So he's a good guy. I like him.
But the ultimate irony is that the NCAA, the entire NCAA, not just the Pac-12, not just a particular conference, but the NCAA had to create new rules to deal with the offense that Chip Kelly ran while at Oregon. And now Oregon is the one that's trying to pull it. Now, I think obviously the common denominator is, as you pointed out, Scott, is Tosh LaPoy. I mean, he's the one that clearly is the common thread in this. Yep. But it's still kind of funny and kind of ironic that Oregon is now the one trying to pull the same crap that they always accused everyone else of. A year, 10 years ago.
I don't know if either one of you know. I don't know the rule. I don't know why I don't know. But you mentioned that they changed the rules with that. So, like, if the offensive team is substituting, that the defense gets time to, bring their guys in. But the other thing I was noticing that Oregon was doing, and not to sound sour grapes, but when they were making their defensive substitutions, when Washington made theirs, they seem to be coming in really slow and really late to not give Penix time to read the defense. So if they're coming in late and the play clock is still running down and Washington's ready to go and the opposition is still coming in, can the offense get a delay of game penalty if they let the play
clock
run?
Absolutely can.
They can, but it's still a discretionary thing from the officials. And I don't know if you guys noticed, but a couple different times I saw them reset the play clock.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like a full reset to 40 seconds. It was, I think, 20, 25 seconds. So I think there is a threshold. Like if you get under a certain number of seconds, that it automatically resets if your guys are lagging or if they're not getting in.
Because it seemed obvious Oregon was coming in slow on a few of those, and Penix had the guys up to the line of scrimmage ready to go. And Oregon guys were on a slow kind of jog to get out there. So I didn't know whether that's you can call a penalty on that or not.
I think, to be honest with you, what I've seen over the year or over the at least like these games is that whenever someone, because again, this is the same reason why, Penix was playing the play clock so late, almost down to zero, is because he was trying to figure out the protections based on not just the way that the defense was lining up for Oregon, but also their personnel, how many people they had in the box, line of scrimmage, that kind of thing. That's why he was so late, because he was trying to determine based on how they were substituting based on Washington substitutions. And so, again, this is all part of that chess game that's going on within the football game.
And before the Oregon fans go crazy, a lot of teams in college football do the same thing. I noticed that, but anything else to clean up from that Oregon win, Scott or Chris?
Well, I'll probably say it at the end, all of the goodwill and national recognition and all of that stuff that happened after the Oregon game goes away if Washington decides to lay an egg this weekend. I don't think they will. But if they lay an egg against Colorado later tonight, man, that is not going to go well for them. I said it after the Michigan State game when Washington came out and played Stanford the following week, and I said you cannot go out and lose to Stanford now. You cannot play badly against them. You have to come out, take care of business, and get this one in the win column and then move on, because you know, there's a lot riding on this. Washington has a ton of momentum. They had a ton of momentum at the beginning of the season when they went into that UCLA game, ended up losing. They lost some momentum, but now they've got a huge wave back in their corner. And if they want to have any chance of getting to the Rose Bowl, they've got to beat Colorado tonight. They've got to beat Washington State whenever that game is held next weekend. And they need to, even if they don't go to the conference championship game, if they can put themselves in third place in the conference, that you got to get it. So I guess wrapping it up, ton of momentum coming out of Oregon, but it cannot stop tonight.
And Chris, I said this before, if I'd been drug tested on Sunday or anybody on the Washington football team, we all would have tested positive for weed. So it's good to be back in Husky Stadium with a little bit of, not that you don't smell it at Husky Stadium, because you definitely do, but boy, that was just overwhelming at times. I know Elise Woodward took off her headset and yeah, sometimes if Elise Woodward was mic'd up during a game, I don't know if there would be anybody that would be more fun than having Elise unplugged. So,
did you have some Cheetos down there, Kim?
Some Cheetos.
Doritos, you know, for the munchies?
No. Just I had some M&Ms in my bag, but I didn't eat them. But
Elise always steals those from you, doesn't she?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Well, it was a weird feeling, guys, this week where I was actually kind of openly looking at some of the post, kind of the week of the Oregon media, and especially Kim, as you mentioned, Chris Hudson and all the kind of, I don't know if a scandal is the right word, but all of the turmoil surrounding him. Well, also in that same interview, because what I listened to John Canzano on my way home after the Washington basketball game Thursday night, and he had Dan Lanning on, and he basically asked Dan Lanning about Bo Nix, because Chris Hudson basically spilled the beans that Bo Nix wasn't going to be playing. And of course, Dan Lanning didn't rise to the bait. But that Chris Hudson interview was about as revealing.
You think he's off limits for the rest of the year?
I don't think, not only is he off limits, he may get run out of town. He may not ever be seen again. The kind of stuff that he was talking about, I mean, to literally confess that he was faking an injury and to give Utah in an extremely important game for both teams to basically give them the biggest piece of intel you could give a team. Yeah. I it's going to be a rough week for him.
You think he was smart enough? Well, maybe I'll tell him he's not playing, so then they'll think it's Ty Thompson. Yeah.
People have talked about him playing 3D chess. He doesn't, after what he said about faking the injury, I don't think he was playing 3D chess in that interview. I just have a sneaking suspicion that he was pretty much just saying what he thought and didn't really actually put any thought into it.
Man, if I had a chance to ask him one question post game, it would be, so Coach Lanning, I haven't talked with you about when you mentioned the fake injuries being a part of the game plan. What was that conversation like?
Well, but you mentioned the people getting high at Autzen Stadium, which is certainly no, something I've seen many times. Hell, I went to Grateful Dead shows back in 93 and 94, so I know all about people getting high at Autzen Stadium. Not during a football game, though, but I'm kind of wondering if Chris Hudson had, if he was a little impaired when he did that interview, because that's about the only thing I can think of.
Yeah, moving on to the Colorado game, Chris, it's a mess there. I mean, it's an absolute mess. And we knew Carl Durrell when he was on the staff here at Washington. I remember my initial reaction when they hired Carl Durrell. Do you remember yours?
Yeah, it was interesting because Rick Neuheisel hired him after Gilby, right? Or was it before Gilby? I can't remember. When did Gilby take over the OC? Was it after Durrell or before Durrell?
I can't remember.
But either way, I was a little surprised, but at the same time, there was an obvious connection with him and Neuheisel at UCLA that if Neuheisel was going to pick someone from his coaching tree, that was going to make as much sense as anything.
Yeah, I just thought that the minute they hired him, you know, that just with, I mean, he's a really nice guy, but I never thought he had the temperament to be a head coach. He proved that down at UCLA where it didn't work out. And I know that the timing of Mel Tucker leaving wasn't ideal, because I thought, you know, they made a good hire in Mel Tucker. But boy, that's going to be a tough gig to fill down there. I don't know if you guys had a chance to listen to Adam Munstetiger that I had yesterday on the podcast, but he said that they lost 26 guys to the portal, and he said it's virtually impossible to get transfers into Colorado. How are they going to fix that?
Did he say why it's going to be virtually?
Academics, just the academic standards there just made it almost virtually impossible to bring guys in.
Well, when I remember listening to it, Kim, is that the standards were one thing, but there also wasn't like a general studies or some of these catch-all majors that a lot of these guys use to kind of fill in the gap if they're unsure or if they want to go to a certain place and just need one, you know, in the meantime to all of a sudden go, okay, well, I was thinking about going into maybe communications or business or what have you. So yeah, it sounds like there's some interesting academic hurdles that a player has to overcome. And he also said, and this is something that Washington fans will remember with, God, who was the player that ended up, he was committed to Washington, big time linebacker, and he ended up going somewhere. He went to Alabama maybe. And he was supposed to be taking summer classes, but they were like foreign language classes. Ollie Cajo. And so that same kind of Cajo type thing apparently happens at Colorado quite a bit, where guys need to shore up their academic resumes to have elective classes like foreign languages. Who wants to take a foreign language to get into a school when a lot of the schools out there don't require that? So those are some of the things that I heard from Adam.
Well, it was like the old JC days here at Washington, you know, where the coaches were telling us, we're telling the kid he's got to take an algebra and Spanish class, and Wazoo's telling him to take another PE or football class. So yeah, it's exactly. Just the same thing. The name that Adam said that was being mentioned sounds like the favorite, odds-on favorite for that job, is Bronco Mendenhall. And Scott, I think you maybe know a little bit more about Bronco than I do.
No, I don't. I mean, other than he went to BYU and had some success there. And then
if he wants to come back out west, I mean, because he really kind of cut his teeth coaching out west, and for him to go east was, you know, is one thing. And you know, it's too bad we should have caught Wayne Talapapa this week on the side and asked him about Bronco, because he would obviously know him well. But yeah, it's interesting. But some of the names that you have heard that have come out, you know, guys like Tom Herman, who supposedly might be interviewing for the ASU job, for instance. I mean, Tom Herman at Colorado, that could be intriguing. But again, Kim, I kind of agree with you in the sense that I don't know if they got enough cachet or credit in the bank to pull in a coach like that. I just get the sense more and more talking to the people at Colorado that follow that team every day that Tucker bailing for Michigan State really not only caught them off guard, but set them back. Oh, yeah. Because he was a guy that was literally, he could have built that program. And there were signs that he was starting to.
And when you talk about where a lot of these colleges are located, Boulder's a pretty good gig, you know, to live in Boulder and raise your family. Like I said, you stop and think about where some of these other colleges are. And yeah, Boulder's pretty damn nice compared to where some of these others are.
Yeah. So. And as far as I know, their facilities are right there. Anybody who's been to Folsom Field knows that can be a hell of an environment. I remember watching one of the Pac-12 networks recaps with Ashley Adamson and Yogi Roth, who's going to be at the game today covering it for the Pac-12 networks. And Ashley Adamson was saying, because she was at the Washington-Oregon game this past weekend, and she said that was as big and an electric an environment as she can remember since she remembered a Colorado game. And it may have been Colorado-Nebraska years ago. And she said she hadn't seen as an electric an environment. And she mentioned Folsom Field by name. So it has the potential to be one of the great places out here to watch a football game. So they've got the facilities and they've got the neighborhood. You know, Kim and I don't remember, Scott, if you've been out to Boulder, but
I have not. That's yeah, one but of the few I haven't been to.
It's fun. It's a great college town. I think it's known as a really, really good college town, one of the best in America. So, yeah, there's a lot of things going for that job.
Well, it'll definitely be interesting to follow. And just, you know, for the facilities, Chris, it's a cool stadium, but make no mistake, it's run down. It needs some love. It definitely needs some love. So I don't know if they have the cash flow in order to make those improvements, especially with attendance down. But I think it's definitely going to be a job to keep an eye on, because I think it's whoever they hire, they're going to have to give time, because with that mass exodus they had, it's going to take at least 3 years to turn that program around. They've so far started off 1-9. They had an overtime victory against Cal, but you take a look at their offensive production this year, they're only averaging 15 points a game.
Yeah, it's not good. It's not good at all.
Yeah, 15.
I was going to say, Kim, in many ways, and I've talked about this all week, this honestly really feels like Colorado's in the exact same spot Washington was a year ago. They've already let their head coach go. They've already let one of their coordinators go. In Washington's case, it was John Donovan. In Colorado's case, it's their defensive coordinator, Chris Wilson. But obviously their offense is sucking to a degree that maybe only Washington fans on the West Coast could understand it in the last year, because they saw it. They saw it in spades. They saw a completely inept offense by the time those guys were getting fired. And you're obviously seeing it this year with Colorado.
We've been through 1-9, Scott. We've been there, done that. But with Colorado,
we've been through 0-12.
But with Colorado, it seemed, you know, those teams were so bad, they'd quit. But the issue with Colorado is I don't think the guys have quit. I think they're playing hard. The problem is they have no experience and they have no depth, and they are playing a ton of young guys. And it's just not a good recipe at this level
of
football.
And they aren't big-time young guys either. They weren't big-time recruits when they came in, and they aren't anymore either. So it's just – you know, I've made the mention of it in my weekly Pac-12 article that you can say what you want about and make fun of Colorado all you want, and I totally get it, but they have not quit. These guys are playing hard. They're hustling. They're working hard. They're trying to figure things out. And, you know, I feel bad for them from the standpoint that I know that they're trying hard, and I know that that coach there was really hoping to be a guy that they would be able to consider. You've got to get somebody in there with some name cachet. I mean, this needs to be their version of the Mike Leach hire that it was for Washington State, because Washington State was always a stepping stone school. You know, coaches would go there, they would do well, and they would become national names moving to their next school. Well, Mike Leach was, because of his history and the stuff he was going through with the lawsuits with Texas Tech, he was a huge name coach. Everybody knew him nationally. Everybody knew what he was going to do. He went in there and he lended a lot of cachet to that program. Colorado is going to have to find that coach that's willing to be a name coach that comes there, or they're going to have to hire an up and coming assistant like a Mel Tucker, and hope that they can keep him around. And right now, I don't know who that's going to be.
It's a tough gig, and
it is.
Like I said, you know, it's attractive because of where it's located. It's attractive because of you know, the academics and the school. But boy, that program, it's going to be tough. Like I said, you're going to need at least 3 years, you know, to turn that program around. It's not good. It's not good at all.
Well, and what's interesting, Kim, is that in your conversation with Adam Munster Tiger this week, you know, he mentioned how it's been kind of pretty poor for years now, except for that one year back in 2016. And Washington fans will remember this because Washington played Colorado in the Pac-12 title game. And Mike McIntyre was the coach then, and it looked like he was a program builder. It clearly looked like they had them completely turned around. And it was really like from the outhouse to the penthouse. But then the next year they went right back to the outhouse. And so not only does Colorado have the ability to get to where they want to go, but the one thing they haven't been able to show in a long time now is any sort of consistency or staying power or anything like that. They can they've been able to catch lightning in a bottle, maybe for a few games here or there, or in the case of 2016, an entire season. But for some reason, they have not been able to carry that thing over from year to year, even with coaches like McIntyre, like Mel Tucker, guys that seem to have that resume and that reputation of being able to program build. So it's really interesting to me.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
The strength of Colorado's offense is their running game. I'm guessing Washington's going to stack the box and dare them to pass the ball. I mean, that's it. That's what everything looks like right now.
Well, here's the really interesting thing about that. Sorry, Scott. But I was going to say, you know, in talking again, listening to Adam and understanding their situation, their best quarterback right now, or at least perception wise, is a true freshman, Josh McCown's son, Owen McCown. Think about what would have happened. Let's say all this stuff happens at Washington a year ago, and Washington right now is 8-2, and somehow Michael Penix missed some games, maybe just a couple games here and there because he was banged up, but he hasn't missed a ton of games. But Sam Heward, for instance, would have had to play four games. And now you're coming into the 11th game of the season, and Penix can't play, but you're trying to preserve Heward's red shirt. What are you? You're literally going to throw in your third string guy because it's already been determined you're going to redshirt the guy who probably would have played in any other circumstance other than that one. And yet this is exactly what Colorado is facing now. They're literally playing a quarterback that they don't want to play because it's already been determined their best guy is going to redshirt. How crazy is that?
That just gives you an idea of what's going on at Colorado, I think.
Yeah. But it's like they can't win for losing, guys. I mean, this is like if any team would earn a break, you know, being 1-9, having three different starting quarterbacks in one season, you would think they, you know, of all the teams that have, you know, earned a little bit of, you know, ease this stuff off just a little bit, it would be Colorado. But nope. The misery is getting heaped on to the point where now they're playing a guy that nobody respects, nobody thinks can do anything. And what does that do for a guy like JT Schraub, the Tennessee transfer, who's going to be playing today?
The good news, Scott, is I expect both teams to run the ball. So with a 6 o'clock start, you know, and running the ball, you get that running clock. We may get out of there at a decent hour.
Do you think Washington's going to run the ball?
Yeah.
I think they'll try.
Yeah.
But I mean, come on. Michael Penix is lighting it up, man. You got to get him in on a Heisman push, man. I'm not saying you just go out and you throw away your entire playbook because so he can get 450 yards, but he's getting 450 yards in the normal course of games. And yeah. I mean, Kim, you're right. If you look at what Colorado does defensively, neither they don't stop anybody on either. In either phase of the game, their run defense, they're allowing almost 228 yards per game. They're 130th in the country. They're second to last, and they're giving up a little over 260 yards per game through the air. So it's for Colorado, it's pick your poison right now. And I think Washington will try and run the ball. And I wouldn't be surprised if you see Wayne Talapapa or Cameron Davis end up with 100 yards at some point, but I think Michael Penix is going to be throwing the ball all over the yard. I think they're going to do what they can to get their guys open and make some big plays down the field. And I think Washington would really, I mean, I think if the coaches had their druthers, they're obviously not going in thinking of it this way, but if they had their druthers, I think they'd like to be up like 28, 30 points, something like that by the end of the third quarter so that they can play some of these younger guys that they still need to get reps for.
Hey, Scott, I've been asking you the past couple of games, but I absolutely loved that at the Oregon game, winning the toss and taking the ball. I think it's a win-win. If they lose the toss, Oregon's going to defer and Washington gets the ball. If they win the toss, they take the ball. But with the offense that Washington's running and it's dynamic as it is, and there's only been one game that they haven't scored on their first possession, I really liked them. Not every year, but with this offense, I really like them taking the ball and putting the pressure on the other team by going ahead early.
Yeah, I understand the way of thinking. I prefer, I'm that person who prefers the defer and let your defense get on the field. But I think Washington will end up taking the ball the rest of the way because they're not playing. I mean, Colorado's offense is not very good. And that's being nice. And Washington State's is average to below average. And I think Washington needs to, if they can get out to a fast start, that puts the pressure on the opposing offense right away.
That's why I like it.
Yeah. And maybe any other year you don't do that. But, this year, I think it's the right call. I wouldn't have agreed with you before, but I saw what it did to Oregon. And it made them make some plays because they knew that Washington was going to be able to score on them. And they knew that they had to go for it on that fourth and one in their own territory. They knew they had to, I mean, that's why they were probably going for it if Bo Nix was still healthy on that fourth and four, whatever it was that they, you know, the possession before when Nix got hurt. So, I think Washington's offense is putting pressure on these opposing offenses, and that's nothing but good for Washington.
And Chris, I'm not talking in general, you know, taking the ball. I'm talking about this team and this offense. Do you like them taking the ball first? You like them having that first possession?
Well, I think it depends, and I think you see that with the way the coaches have schemed this, because what have they done every week until Oregon? They've deferred if they've won the toss.
Yeah.
So it's not like they haven't gone out and scored on their first drives anyway. They've done it in both situations. So to me, Colorado, I think you defer every time. I agree with Scott that it doesn't really matter, but I think you'd rather have control coming out of halftime. If you do run yourself in the situation where you feel like you've got to make some serious adjustments and get to the locker room to kind of
winning that toss against Oregon and taking the ball, do you think that changed the game plan for Oregon? Because I think it did.
Well, I don't know if it changed the game plan for Oregon, but it certainly set an early marker. And I think we talked about it last week in the pregame that if you won the toss, you should be taking the ball, because in that environment, what's the number one thing you need to do if you're the opposition? You need to shut up the crowd. You need to give them a reason to sit on their hands. And Washington did that by taking the ball and scoring. But that whole thing gets completely undone if you don't get any points. So that's the risk you run. But this offense is efficient enough that they were able to get that done. And so it looks really, really smart in hindsight. And honestly, it was the right thing to do. That's why I think you defer today against Colorado if you win. But if you win it in the Apple Cup, you take it.
Well, the other thing,
that's the difference between going home and away. It's the difference between getting up early when you're in the difficult environment to give yourself an opportunity to lay down that marker and show the opponent that you're ready. You mean business. Let's go.
Yeah, and against Oregon, the other reason I like them taking the ball is Oregon's defense has struggled, and that put them behind the eight ball right away, being able to score against Colorado. I don't think it's going to matter, but Washington State's defense is probably better than some of the ones that they've played against this year. But, you know, jumping ahead to Washington State, I've said this for a while now. This game, these games that are being played this year aren't about stopping the opponent. It's about scoring them. And I think Washington will be able to outscore Colorado. I think they'll be able to outscore Washington State, where Washington State's defense might be a little bit better, but I think Washington offense. But you take a look at what's going on, and we talked about this on the earlier podcast. You know, we hate to be so dismissive, like this is going to be a walkover, but I just don't see any way that Washington is not up big, and we'll finally get a chance again to see the backup quarterbacks, Dylan Morris and Sam Heward.
Yeah, I sure hope that's what ends up happening. And I mean, everything points to it being that way, but everything pointed, at least to me, to be in an Oregon win last week. So, you know, I this year has been so screwy at times, and I just think the Huskies are pretty dialed in right now, and I think Kalen DeBoer and Ryan Grubb are feeling good about the offense. I think the defense continues to make some strides. They struggled with tackling last week, but they're not going to be tackling a guy that's like what Noah Whittington or what is it, Bucky Irving or whatever his name is, and those guys are just ridiculous runners, and Colorado doesn't have that. So I think Washington makes some progress. I think having the fans behind them definitely helps as well, and they're playing on turf, and Washington does really well on turf regardless of where they end up playing. So, I mean, think about it, guys. The only two games they've lost this year are games they played on grass. So, you know, I think Washington's going to come out and fly around and make some plays.
Hey, Chris, how much of a difference on defense has Eddie Ulofoshio made?
Well, you could argue that he was the difference against Oregon, because if Noah Whittington doesn't lose his footing, because the reason, and if you really break that last play, that last fourth down play down, he's trying to change direction because he can see Eddie shooting that B gap, and he's got it. He's got him dead to rights. So even if he doesn't, and he just decides, okay, I'm just got to go through this linebacker to get this yard, I just don't think that's going to happen. If you're going to put any linebacker in that B gap to, you know, basically fit the run and to stop a guy and make him go backwards, of all the linebackers you could pick at Washington, I would think Washington fans would pick Eddie Ulofoshio first, second, and third.
What did he only have, 15 snaps?
No, I think he had more like 25 to 27.
Yeah, he played a lot more than we thought he was going to.
Yeah, he had probably about three to four times as many as he did against Oregon State. One thing I would say real quick, Scott, in terms of Colorado not having a running back quite in the same mold as an Irving or a Whittington, I agree in general. But we have to remember Alex Fontenot is coming off his career. I don't know if it's a career best or season best, but he ran for over 100 yards against USC. He's feeling confident. He thinks he can run the ball. I don't know why Washington would ever want to give that guy a chance to be a difference maker.
He's good.
But one thing, he's definitely the one guy that you need to focus on to see what he can do. But what I would say is, one of the things that the national media has brought up in some of the podcasts and things that I've seen is that one of the reasons why Washington's getting undervalued potentially at 17 in the playoff poll is because you look at Michigan State, you look at Stanford. Those are the two prime examples that I can remember or Arizona as well, I think to a certain extent, where Washington got out to a lead and then the teams came back to make it somewhat respectable. So if we're talking about Washington getting a big lead going into the fourth quarter and bringing in the backups, I'd be wary about that. I wonder if the coaches are also wary about that as well. They really have to balance this fine thing because, first of all, they're pretty banged up. That Oregon game was a really physical game, probably the most physical game of the year. And so they're going to be managing bodies and things like that. You talked to Alex Cook this week. You talked to Henry Bainavalu this week. You talked to some of these other seniors. They're banged up, but they're like, this is senior night. We got to push through. We got to lead by example. They're going to leave this all on the field. This is a legacy game for those seniors. But at the same time, they've got to manage this thing because they still have one more game to play against Washington State, and obviously, which is a monster game as well. So there's that fine balance. They want to play a lot of these young guys if they can, but Washington's also had a history of this year of not giving up leads, but making these games a lot closer than they need to be. And so we'll see how they manage all that stuff.
Be a fun game for sure. 6 o'clock start, and we still do not have a time for the Apple Cup. So when are we going to find out? On Saturday? I mean, on Sunday or Monday, Chris? Probably Monday?
Yeah, tomorrow or Monday. Yeah.
I think Sunday. I think we find out tomorrow.
Yeah. So thanks, Pac-12.
But, yeah, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
That's not
Pac-12. That's the networks.
The network. That's ESPN. That's Fox. That's the price. They paid a premium so that they could do that to the fans. So
quick.
I don't know if it's do it to the fans, but I get what you're saying.
That's how I'm characterizing it, because I think there's a lot of fans out there that feel done.
Quick word from our sponsors, and when we return, we'll touch bases on recruiting, both football and a big signing for UW basketball. And just Husky legend on Saturday, somebody I'm really looking forward to seeing. That and more when we return. It's the guys from Dogman.com on Dogman Radio.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back. I'm Kim Grinnells with Chris Fetter, Scott Eklund. 6 o'clock kickoff tonight at Husky Stadium against Colorado. TV is Pac-12 Network, the big Pac-12 Network. How's that sound? We talked about Big Fox. We got the big Pac-12 Network, but again, 6 o'clock kickoff. And Scott, let's touch bases on football recruiting. Maybe a little bit going on, not a ton.
Yeah, there's going to be a couple of official visitors here this weekend. One is going to be Devin Bryant, the linebacker recruit out of St. John Bosco, is committed to Washington. He never took his official, and I mentioned it earlier in the week, that when he told me that he was coming up for his official, I was like, wait a second, is that your second one? And then I looked, oh, he hadn't taken one. So that one surprised me a little bit. But anyway, he's coming up. There's a chance Keith Reynolds could be coming up for his official visit. We'll have to wait and see. And then Channing Canada, cornerback out of Trinity Valley. He's a JUCO kid. He is coming up for his official visit. He does have three other official visits scheduled. And so I do not expect a decision, but I think Washington getting in first and showing him that atmosphere, that game day atmosphere, and all that they have to offer, I think, and Washington's having a better season than all the other teams that he's looking at. So I think Washington's got a decent chance of reeling him in, but they're taking their shot this weekend. So
hey Scott, real quick on Canada, when you had a chance to talk to him, is he a Zeke Turner kind of guy that was just kind of a late bloomer, or was it academic?
No, it was grades. Grades. Yeah, he just, well, I shouldn't say that. He did have the grades to get in, but he was a late qualifier, and Houston Baptist was the only school that offered him. So he went there for a year. I think that was the COVID year. No, that was 2021. So he went to Houston Baptist, and then this year he transferred into and he redshirted there, and then he transferred into TVC, and he will graduate in December. So he'll be on campus wherever he ends up signing. He'll be on campus in January, and that'll be huge for Washington. If they can reel him in, they'll get him in for the entire offseason program and everything like that, and he'll be able to come in and work with the team and all that. And Jordan Perryman did the same thing, but I think this kid is a much more dynamic corner prospect. He's not as big as Perryman, or as long, but he's much more sticky, and he's also a guy who has played a lot of man-to-man and everywhere he's been, and he's a punt returner. So that's something to keep an eye on too.
Hey Scott, real quick, is Trinity Valley, is that in Texas?
Yes, it's. I don't know exactly where. I should have looked that up, but Trinity Valley is in Texas. Yes.
Yeah, I was just the only reason I was asking was because first of all, I didn't know, but I was curious. Is this one of the few times where we've seen Washington actively go into a Texas JUCO? Because I know they've done the Kansas thing a bunch, like, yeah. Quentin Moore was at Independence, and they've done that over the years. But I
that
can't
was a
remember,
local kid though. That was a local kid though. Yeah. So
no, but what I'm saying is I don't remember Washington under any staff.
I think they brought in a kid from Blinn. That's also
well, that
in
was
Texas.
Rod Green.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That was
a long time ago.
That was
though.
20 years ago. That was Neuheisel.
Washington usually brings in, if they did bring in guys, they brought them from Arizona, which doesn't have JUCO football anymore.
Right.
And California, and maybe Utah, because they have snow, which is a place that Washington has looked at some guys and gotten a guy or two out of. But for the most part, it was Arizona and California, and it's still kind of that. Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else going on in football recruiting, Scott?
The coaches are – I mean, there's going to be a 2024 kid on campus that Washington has offered. And there's going to be a few other guys. I wouldn't be surprised to see E.J. Kamenong on campus. I don't think Landon Hatchett will be there because I think he's got a game this today. I'm pretty sure he plays tonight. So, it's that time of year when this is the last home game. And so I think they're trying to get as many kids in as possible. And you're going to see – I think you'll see a handful of local kids that will be on hand for the last home game. But the coaches kind of – blew it out in the summer, and so that's why you haven't seen a lot of official visitors on campus. There's been a couple official visitors or unofficial visits during the week this week. Greg Biggins reported on one of them, Riverside down there. Jordan Whitney's teammate. He's a kid who that Washington's looking for 2024. He was up in the middle or at early in the week and things like that. So they're just trying to get some of these 2024s on campus, let them see things so that they get the game day experience and all that, but also meet with them. But they're also trying to wrap up these 2023 guys that they still like. And I wouldn't be surprised if you see one more. I've been getting texts all throughout this podcast that another JUCO kid could be on campus this weekend. So we'll have to wait and see.
Okay. Basketball recruiting, huge, huge, huge signing for Mike Hopkins and the basketball team. Wesley Yates, the number two. He's the number two shooting guard in the country, number 35 player overall. Wesley Yates out of Beaumont, Texas. He's a cousin of Quincy Pondexter, and Quincy's been killing it on the recruiting trail, bringing in Braxton Mia and Wesley Yates. But Wesley Yates is definitely a guy who can come in, and I would expect him to be a starter on next year's team, probably replacing Jamal Bay at that position. But he's 6'4", 200 pounds, and not only is a great basketball player, but a 3.9 GPA to go along with that as well. And when, you know, guys, we know this, if you can get a guy that's a really good player and getting it done in the classroom, that makes life a lot easier. So he's a good kid, and that's a huge pickup for Mike Hopkins. Again, his name is Wesley Yates, and he's a high four-star, 35 rated, number 35 overall in the class of 2023, and number two shooting guard overall in the country. But hey, Chris, I want to get back to a story. I just remember a long time ago, because it just seems like we've been doing this forever. You were up at Lakes High School, and you met with Dave Miller, and Dave was churning out quite a few guys, and you told me about Dave talking to you and smiling and going and pointing to a guy, and he goes, "That's Bambi. That's my freshman," with a big smile on his face. You remember that?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, it was, seeing a guy like that, revelation. I mean, he was probably at that point, maybe 6'2", 6'3", probably 180, 190. And I think eventually, what would he be, end up being like 6'3", 6'4", 215?
Yeah,
a guy
220.
That Dave Miller was convinced at the time that he may not even be as good a receiver as he is a safety. He could be maybe an NFL star on defense. He was that good. And I remember the stories when they would go to playoff games and he was, one of his legs was really banged up and he was almost literally playing on one leg and was still being the difference maker that everyone knows that he is now. But yeah, the hype on him was severe. I remember, this is so long ago that I was still living in Walla Walla at the time. I wasn't even living in Seattle, and got together with some friends and we were watching Fox Northwest.
Yeah.
And that was he went into the studio and he was picking between Washington and Michigan and he had taken a trip to UCLA and
You haven't said his name yet.
Whose name?
Who you're talking about?
You talked about Reggie Williams.
Yeah, well, I said Bambi. But Reggie Williams, he, and he'll be the Husky legend today, by the way. But go ahead.
Well, I assume that's why you brought him up, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And so then we just watched it, and the rumor at the time, everybody was wondering what he was going to do. Anybody had any scoop on who he was going to pick? And I remember his mom, I think she was working maybe at Boeing at the time, or she was working somewhere, and people had seen her in a Michigan sweatshirt. And so, of course, everyone at Washington was freaking out that he was going to pick Michigan. And then he goes on. But at that time, no one really had the idea that if you go on local networks that you're going to pick the, you know, some other school than the local school. I mean, you'd be insane. So, you know, he goes on, obviously picks Washington, and the rest is history. I mean, you look at that first game he ever played at Husky Stadium, which happened to be that come from behind win against Michigan. I remember that place was absolutely packed. I wasn't in the booth that day. I was actually in the West End zone, probably for that might be the only time I've ever seen a game in the West End zone. And I think a friend and I literally got the last, I think, two tickets that were paired together that they were saying in terms of the ticket office. And we watched that punt block with Rock Alexander taking it the house the other way. And then Omari Lowe with the pick six a couple plays later against John Navarre. But Reggie Williams going down the sideline, the Michigan sideline, losing his shoe. What did he still have, like 150, 100 and some yards in his very, very first game? Yeah. I mean, he had already almost reached legendary status before he'd even taken a snap at UW, and that just confirmed it. And then, obviously, the legendary battles he had with, like, Marcus Trufant and some of those games were amazing. And then, obviously, the game at Oregon where he scored a couple touchdowns in the second half. And, you know, Washington ended up just routing Oregon. I think it was 42-14, something like that. There are a lot of great memories with Reggie Williams playing for the Huskies.
I'll just never forget Reggie in that Oregon game. I'm on the sidelines, and Cody Pickett was just throwing quick outs to Reggie, and they had these small cornerbacks at Oregon, and they'd come up and hit him. They just bounce off of him. Yeah. I mean, they were just bouncing off of him. Reggie was just running over, and a couple times he just ran at the full length into the end zone. But they ran that play all day. Reggie was at the basketball game Thursday. I also texted Cody Pickett. Cody Pickett will be up here with Reggie on the sidelines today. And, boy, you get those two together. But can we get those two mic'd up? That would be fun.
Here's your job for today, Kim. You got to make sure, obviously, you get a picture of those two, because you can do it. Hopefully we can get a before and after. You can go back to your archives and see if you have a picture of those two back in, 2001, 2002, and then see what they look like today.
Reggie's one of my all-time favorites. He's just when I saw him last night, I go, your eyebrows grew back. But that's a whole nother story. He's in town with his wife and his kids, and it sounds like he's got a young son who's not real big yet, but he probably looks like he's about 11 years old, and Reggie goes, he's next. So Reggie's living down in Houston. He's doing some work with some football. So I don't think we've heard the last of Reggie Williams yet. So we'll keep an eye on that. So really looking forward to seeing Reggie this afternoon, and really, really looking forward to seeing Cody Pickett as well. So wrap it up, Chris Fetters.
Yeah, I think this is going to be an interesting game today. I know that people are already, like Scott has alluded to, kind of treated this game like an afterthought. I think that's a mistake. I don't think obviously the coaches are talking about this being a trap game or Colorado's offense being a little dangerous, because not only are they a team that's wounded and a team with nothing to lose, but according to some of the Washington defensive coaches, you know, this is a team that will really try to scheme you, really try to get you into some different things that maybe you haven't seen, some different pictures. And so that'll be interesting from that standpoint. And then I'm also looking to at the end of the game. Let's say they do get up 30, 35 points, whatever it is. Can they really put the boot down and put this thing to bed in a way that they haven't necessarily done this year? You know, they've won some games, and they've won some games by a couple touchdowns. But these were games, like you look at that Michigan State game at one point. What was it, like 39-10 or something? These are games that they need to finish out the right way. And I think there should be an element of really trying to finish this game tonight the way they need to, especially for the seniors. So I'm going to be looking for how they come out of the game and also how they finish the game. I think those things are going to be really important, especially when you go into a short week. Even though it's the game Saturday, it's going to be a shortish week against Wazoo because of Thanksgiving and the holiday and everything else.
And a pissed off Scott Eklund finish it up because you just are disappointed that it's not a real late night game. You prefer those 7:30 starts.
Yes, I am so sad that it's 6 o'clock. No, I kind of said it all before. Chris reiterated it. I just think you got a huge win over Oregon. You're back in the national spotlight again. Don't lose that hold. Don't lose that foothold, man. You got to come out. Take care of business. If Washington does what they should do, this really is a game, and you know, it's coach speak, but it's really true. It's not about Colorado in this game. This is about Washington, and Washington needs to be focused. If they're focused and they come out, they don't make mistakes, don't turn the ball over, you just do what they do, they should win this game relatively easily. I don't know if they're going to win by 31, which is what Vegas has them at. But I think Washington wins this game rather comfortably, and we see the backups for, I'd say, at least a couple possessions.
Yeah, a little bit concerned that we're talking about such a blowout win and Colorado not having a chance. And then I just remember a couple weeks ago looking at the scoreboard and seeing Colorado or Colorado USC at the end of the first quarter. It was 3-2.
Yeah, so, yeah, I know.
So, you know, we'll see what happens. But again, just really looking forward to seeing Reggie Williams, looking forward to seeing this offense, and looking forward to getting a time on the Apple Cup as well. So anyways, one more time, 6 o'clock kickoff on big Pac-12 network. So that's channel 628 for those who have Comcast and Xfinity. So we'll have complete and total post-game coverage, and you can only get the best stuff at dogman.com. So for all of us at dogman.com, I'm Kim Grinnells along with Chris Fetters and Scott Eklund. Go Dogs.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.